When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
It's time to tell our Pod Meets World listeners that if you're currently tuning in via headphones, it's time you take audio seriously and join the JLab family.
JLab offers incredible sound for all of life's moments.
It's tech done better. Consumers deserve better than the same old tech they've been stuck with.
Instead of high price tags, everyone should have access to new innovations and products they actually want. So JLab thought, hey, why not do something about it?
What are you waiting for? Get out there and join the JLab family.
JLab.com. JLab, your kind of tech.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. Welcome, everybody, to Pod Meets World. I am Danielle Fischel, a.k.a. Topanga Lawrence.
And I am Ryder Strong, a.k.a. Sean Hunter.
And I am Will Friedle, a.k.a. Eric Matthews.
How you guys doing? You ready to jump into the pilot?
Yeah, this was an interesting experience. It's funny, though. Like, I don't know how you guys feel, but I definitely remember the pilot. Well, actually, this is probably a different... Well, obviously, Danielle, you weren't in the pilot, so it's a whole different thing. But I shot the pilot two different times.
Yeah.
And so we did it before you were cast, Will, and there was a different dad. So and in any case, the pilot, I actually remember more than probably any other episode. So it was very bizarre to know lines. Like, I could actually, like, hear lines and be like, oh, my gosh, I remember that. But then also... completely not understand like what the show was about because I was still just very much a kid in the midst of a show. You know, I had, so there's a lot to talk about.
Let me tell everybody exactly what the pilot episode was. It was season one, episode one, otherwise known as 101. And it was called The Pilot. It first aired September 24th, 1993. And the episode is that Corey is caught listening to the Phillies game in class while Mr. Feeney is trying to teach the class about love. So they're talking about Romeo and Juliet, and he is listening to the Phillies game in headphones. Eric decides to take his girlfriend on their very first date to the Phillies game instead of Corey. Oh. So Corey is furious and thinks that love is ruining his life, and he decides to live in his treehouse. And that was my watch hitting the desk very angrily.
Passionate.
He lives in his treehouse that happens to overlook the backyard of their neighbor.
And side yard.
This is a huge debate.
Oh my.
We're already jumping in. So a couple of years ago, there was a kerfuffle online as to whether it's a side yard or a backyard.
Side yard or the backyard. Okay, we will get into it then. So Corey's treehouse overlooks the backyard of Mr. Feeney's backyard because, very important to the show, Mr. Feeney is Corey's next door neighbor. Will, how did you feel watching the pilot?
Okay, so it made me very, very anxious to go back into the world. I don't know why. I have no reason that can pop up in my head immediately as to why I was so anxious pressing play, but I was. And then as I got into the episode, I realized one of the reasons why I didn't want to watch it, and it's because I am the worst.
You used to say to me, you'd be like, I didn't learn how to act until the second season.
Dude, I said that and I believed it, but this was
I thought you were worse because you've been saying this since we were, like 20. You've been like, I didn't learn how to act. But I watched it. I was like, no, Will's great.
I was by far the worst actor for the entire episode. Lily, everybody was nailing their jokes. I was laughing out loud at certain points. And then I would come on the screen. It was like, A, what am I doing with my hands? Which I had no, it was like, I will walk this way because I was told to walk this way. And then it was like, I will get into it.
You had no character, to be fair. Like Eric,
but
was
I could have invented
sort of
something. You had four lines and were the by far, Ryder, I'm saying this, you were by far the best actor on the episode.
Yes, that is true.
You were by far the best actor on the episode. And I'm including the adults. Maybe Bill, because Bill was Bill and you knew what Bill was going to get and he was brilliant.
You guys are crazy. I was like, what am I doing? I look so
awkward. But you were
that's
the thing is you were already Sean. Like you had that the character was already there. You could tell there was some angst. You were the only one who was natural in your line readings, especially in the cafeteria scenes.
Yep.
Like Sean was already there. And then there was the rest of the show. And it was like, it was weird.
That's funny. Cause I guess in a lot of ways, Sean was an easy, Sean was it was so easy to not be Corey. Do you know what I mean? Like
Corey
is so defined and he's so anxious and he's so like just outwardly freaked out about everything that to have his best friend be like reserved and kind of cool.
Yeah.
And, like it was an easy, like he was such a good foil. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, he was an 11-year-old stand-up comic.
Right.
That's what it was. That's what I realized when I was watching it. It was like, the show is about an 11-year-old stand-up trying to go to school.
Right.
Which is what it seemed like to me, like he was doing bits the whole time.
Totally. And he does this thing that was so funny, like to realize now, he has that like, and this is a classic Michael Jacobs, creator of the show. This is a classic thing that he does as a writer and as in person too, where he sort of has a character just state exactly the obvious with so much cynicism. You're like, well, I just hate everybody all the time. And like having an 11-year-old say that was so funny. Like it's so cute, right? And it's like, I just realized like, Ben, I always thought that was something. Like, well, here, in general, I was amazed at how much of the show, what Boy Meets World became, was already there. I was blown away by how much was encoded into the pilot because I truly believed in my head after all these years that the show developed and changed and became this thing, which it did. I mean, it definitely grew, but you could see the heart was there in the pilot. And that was truly, I did not expect that. I really thought that the pilot was going to be like, what is the show? And instead I was like, oh no, it was all there. Like there was so much of the show was there.
Yeah. I thought there were so many. First of all, I'm not in the pilot. I do not appear until episode 4. So I truthfully don't remember. I'm assuming I did watch it when the show aired in 93. Because I probably sat with my family to watch the show that I knew I was going to be on, but I don't have really a memory of watching the pilot. But I was amazed at how much, like, all of the different layers. Like now when you watch a pilot, it's very much, let's just meet the characters. But the storyline of Corey is learning about love in school because of Romeo and Juliet. And then love impacts his own life inside his family's home because he's going to a baseball game that he's very excited about with his older brother. And then he gets ditched by his older brother. So now love means, you know, something bad to him. Then he gets reminded that he once ditched somebody he loved, that as he got older, he may have ditched his father. He learns about that. And then he sees Mr. Feeney possibly get ditched and hurt by love. And then in the end, he realizes he could have a different impact on his sister's relationship to what love means. Like that is, and that's so many different layers of, of deep storyline for one, a kid's show, and two, a pilot.
Right. Yeah. And a pilot in which not that much actually happens. I mean, it's not like he runs away and joins a circus. He goes to the backyard, sits in his treehouse. But it has such emotional stakes. And I guess that's what I mean is that the tone of the show, the seriousness of it, you know, like there's a period where there's not a laugh for like a good 10, 12 minutes where, you know, Mr. Feeney and Corey have that scene in detention that is just pure wonderful writing and acting. I mean, Bill is so good.
He's a genius.
I could not believe how amazing Bill Daniels is in the show. And you just realize that was the defining character. And I, you know, this is, we have to tell this story, which is that, the pilot, when we shot the pilot, when you guys weren't there, we did a table read and the network hated it. And the network immediately made Michael rewrite it. And Bill Daniels said, I'm not doing this kid's show, and threatened to quit. And Michael Jacobs rewrote the pilot from start to finish. It was a completely different script. I would love to get my hands on it. It still involved Romeo and Juliet, but it did not have any of this other stuff. And Michael Jacobs, this the lore is that he wrote it in one night. I think that might be true. Rewrote the entire pilot, only keeping certain jokes and certain themes, the Romeo and Juliet. But what they delivered the next day was essentially what is this pilot. And it's, I think it's really, really good. And I was blown away by Bill's performance and his commitment and the tonal shifts. The fact that it starts off as this sort of Dennis the Menace-y, that wily kid and the grumpy teacher. And then it goes somewhere else. It goes somewhere truly deep and meaningful. It explores all those relationships. Like you said, the dad, the mom, the sister, the brother. And the original pitch for this show, which everyone kind of forgets, was what would it be like if instead of following the older brother on Growing Pains, they followed the middle brother?
Yeah, it was Growing Pains if it was the middle, the middle brother.
Because Growing
lead.
Pains was a hit show, and Michael Jacobs was an established television creator. They wanted to create a show for Ben Savage, so they partnered Ben and Michael then went to the network to create a show for Ben with his partner at the time, April Kelly. And the two of them came up with the show, which was, let's, instead of doing the typical thing that's on television right now, which is focusing on the older brother and a family of younger kids, let's focus on the middle kid who gets lost. And that's exactly what the pilot is, right? He gets lost between his relationships with his teacher, who also happens to be his neighbor. He gets lost with his relationship with his dad, his sister. He's in between. He's in that, and it's such a great place for a character to sort of have to work out from.
One of the things that amazed me when I was watching it was the genius that is... Forget Bill Daniels' performance, which is
next level.
Yes. Next level. It's ridiculous. But the genius of having such a well-written teacher to where you can teach on a show. I mean, all the shows that you watch, especially kid shows, it was like the dad would impart a lesson or the mom would impart a lesson or one of his friends, he'd learn something that we Boy Meets World literally had a teacher. Who could take the lessons that he's teaching in school and teach them so you could apply them to life. And it had never been done like that. It was always, the teacher was always the buffoon.
Yeah, was the teacher always was the to crazy be made fun guy. Of it.
Yeah.
No, it was amazing. It sets this structure up that I think existed throughout Boy Meets World, but certainly in the early years, where you can deliver abstract ideas, abstract lessons, like in the mouth of Feeney, you can have things very declaratively stated. Love means this. Sometimes this happens in life. Whatever the sort of, you know, declarative abstract concept. And then you have that intention with Corey's messy life or all of our messy lives. And that's just a great structure for a sitcom, right? Because it allows you to sort of make a thesis statement. Like, this is the episode about love and all its permutations. And Mr. Feeney's going to always be right. right? And it's very sort of almost biblical in a sense, right? It's like you have this like abstract testament idea of like, this is the lesson, this is the rule about life. And Mr. Feeny can sort of say it. And then you have just like these little sketches of scenes where Corey's going, none of this makes sense. What are you talking about? How do I relate love to my brother and love to my little sister and love to, and he does. And that's just, and you as the audience are inside of that process and you're able to enjoy Corey, but you're also able to sort of record in the back of your mind, like, oh yeah, like there's something more important going on here that I need to think about.
It also showed though, I thought, it is very strange because it also, again, we should talk about this a little bit. So there was an original pilot that was shot without myself, without William Russ. They recast a couple people.
William Russ is Rusty Russ.
Who plays
Alan Matthews.
Alan Matthews. And Matt McCoy was the original dad. I'll never forget that. And Harry, I'm going to do this poor man an injustice. I want to say Branchy was
his
name.
That's right, something like that.
A fine actor, just we've talked about this in several things where he was recast because he just wasn't tall enough. That's all it was. He was literally the same size as Ben already. They knew Ben was going to grow and they wanted somebody to be
when
the older
brother. When
you're
a kid actor, they are always concerned with how tall you are.
How tall you are.
Because if you outgrow the people that are supposed to be older than you or you get taller than the adults, it ruins.
It does.
You're usually playing younger than yourself. I remember at one of our conventions, I ran into a fellow child actor grown up and they were like, why did we all turn out so short? And I'm like, because being short when you're a child actor is such a benefit because you can be 10 years old and play 8 or 7. Yeah. You can be older and play younger. So you end up casting short people, shorter kids. And anyway, go on.
So that's what happened. They recast. And so the pilot, if memory serves, reshooting the pilot was actually for me, episode 2. Because the first thing that we did was the
episode 2.
One. Which will be the next episode we watch, was actually the first episode that I ever shot.
Right.
So going back to the pilot, the pilot wasn't even my audition scene. Like my audition scene was from that first episode. So going back and shooting it again was very strange, I know, for you guys, because you're like, oh, we've done this already. And then it was like, well, we've got to go back and shoot the first episode second to get everything kind of on the line. But they also kind of saw where some of the show was going to go, because if memory serves, Lee Norris is in the opening title credits, but he's not in the episode.
Yeah, well, we had banked probably 3 or 4 episodes before anything aired.
So he was a regular and was in the opening title sequence, which we can talk about the wonderful opening title sequence.
Yes, let's please.
Because well, should we start with the cold open? Should we just get ready?
Yeah, yes. Okay, right, let's start with the cold open.
Cold open is Corey Feeny and me and Chauncey Leopardi.
Yep.
Who was the other best friend at the time. In the pilot, originally Corey was supposed to have 2 best friends. Chauncey Leopardi, you guys might remember from The Sandlot. And what else? He did
a bunch.
Yeah, he ended up working a lot. But it didn't end up staying on our show. I think he was originally supposed to be another regular best friend. And then throughout the first season, we'll talk about this, we kept replacing the other best friend. We went through several.
Yeah, it was going to be Corey and his 2 best friends.
Right.
And Ryder was one of those best friends. And then there was like a rotating 3rd friend.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say it. Michael just kept firing all the kids that were, I mean, but it's true. I mean, if we're going to be talking about it, we called it the death chair, the chair that Chauncey is sitting in there. And it was every kid they brought in. Some of them didn't even make it to we've talked about this in the first episode we did, didn't even make it to the second run through.
That's not technically the death chair because we rearranged. I think in the next episode, the cafeteria changes.
We set the tables
in a different formation and then that became the death chair.
It did. Okay. Whoever sat in the chair was gone.
We'll keep an eye on the death chair. So it's a simple little scene. We introduce Corey and Mr. Feeny, who like their characters are immediately well established. I thought, you know, it's just so funny. I also just was astounded at how, direct everybody is with each other. Like Mr. Feeny's just mean. Corey's just a brat. I was like, oh, we're going bold strokes, like right out the gate. And then that opening credit sequence, it is so dated. Oh my God.
Bam, 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 bam.
It's bonkers.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
It's 2024 and stress is already everywhere.
Deadlines at work.
Your kid's screaming at you.
Non-stop traffic.
The world is ending.
That's a big jump there, Ryder.
Yeah, sorry, kind of true.
Yeah, well, when we want to get away from the struggles of everyday life and have some comforting me time, we break into some Keebler Sandies.
Let's say it's finals week and Mr. Feeney has scheduled all of the tests into one day. How will Topanga find a comforting moment to herself?
Go to the mall?
Not with this hair.
Play guitar with her father, Jedediah?
Depends on which Jedediah.
Bite into some delicious Keebler Sandies?
Exactly. Keebler Sandies are buttery shortbread cookies made with simple ingredients.
And each Keebler Sandies cookie is baked to perfection by the adorable Keebler elves for a light sweetness and texture that melts in your mouth.
God bless those little Keebler elves.
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat that will keep you going.
So, the next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for a Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
Tell the elves Pod Meets World sent ya.
They're real. I've seen them.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car. Backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it.
Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by the experts.
Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach.
Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms. Well, I'm sorry, you want to talk about dated. Before we even get to that, can we talk about how the big joke was a Steve Lawrence joke?
Wait, yeah. What?
I didn't even get exactly. That. I wrote that down. I was like, I don't know what this is.
The suck-up joke?
No. Steve Lawrence was, he would come on and do like these Steve and Edie kind of things. And he was always late night. They would bring him on. And it was like, so the build-up of the joke between these three 11-year-olds.
Who stayed up the latest, right?
It was who stayed up the latest. And yeah. It's like, and when you, so you've got an 11-year-old throwing out a Steve Lawrence joke and everyone going, Steve Lawrence? It's,
I don't think I knew that reference at the
going,
time, by the way.
Of course.
So that's me acting because I have no clue what I'm saying.
Nobody did, nor did anybody who watched the show. I will guarantee you there was not a kid in America that went, they nailed that Steve Lawrence joke.
Like, that never happened because it was just the most random. Like, are you kidding me? Okay. They're doing a Steve Lawrence
joke. But then
joke.
During the opening credits, which that song, let's talk about. So Ray Colcord did the music for Boy Meets World all 7 years. He great died guy. A couple years ago. May he rest in peace. Was just the sweetest, nicest yeah. man. And so
such
talented.
A genius. So he was talented. A genius.
He could do yeah. any type of music you wanted him to. They would bring him on and we'd be like, well, we're doing a rock and roll show. This, and he'd like immediately just write a song.
1940s song. Yeah. Okay,
it was incredible.
There you go.
Yep. But that theme song, it's so long and it just keeps going and going through all these like transitions and like I just couldn't believe it. And then there's like literally a rollerblade like coming in and smacking Corey in the head. And it's like, what is happening?
He pulls off the Band-Aid like he's got to take
colors,
the Band-Aid. Yeah.
The
yeah.
color, it's like you could not, if you hired a creative now to be like, go make the most 90s opening credits you can, they would pick that color palette, those outfits, and those computer graphics.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
And the worst.
Well, so it was also fun. The start of, obviously, with it being called Boy Meets World, it was the start of us doing every photo shoot and everything holding a globe.
Oh,
we're always throwing a globe. Always, here's your world. Like, all right, here we go. But I distinctly remember two things about the opening title sequence. I remember lying on, they're like, oh, we're going to shoot the opening title sequence now. I thought they'd pull stuff from the show. They didn't. They're like, all right, just lie on the bed and flip through a magazine, but look up at us as you're doing it.
Oh, the classic.
And I was
sitcom
like, so why am I flipping through? And this is, you know, my first episode ever. So I'm not asking any questions. I'm like, that makes sense. OK, got it.
Sure.
So I'm not looking at the magazine as I'm flipping through it. And then the other thing I remember is Betsy. Betsy was so funny. She did that.
Betsy Randall played
Amy Matthews. She finished it. And when we all got together to watch the pilot, I think we all got together to watch the pilot. Maybe there was some episode where we all got together to watch. And she looked at me right as her scene. She puts the Band-Aid on his head and she gives him this look as she walks away. And she turns to me and in such a Hollywood way. She goes, that's my please watch our show look. And it was just the way she said it was so cool because she was. If you look at it, she gives this big smile and she's like, oh, Corey, like this big kind of please watch our show. And it was just every time I watch that opening title sequence, it's so funny. You're like throwing the paper airplane yeah. and
there was only two lines in the script describing Sean. You know, you don't really get much character description, but it was the thin, sly best friend of Corey. That's kind of all we had to go on. But, you know, like I said earlier, being any sort of savvy or like calm in the face of Ben Savage's Corey just instantly created a character. But I do remember they wanted me to be a troublemaker. That was like early on discussed. So like, yeah, when they gave me a paper airplane and said, just throw it like you're going to hit somebody and get away with it. So that's my getting away with it.
So when did you guys meet versus and how long was it between the first time you met and filming the pilot we all now know as the pilot?
I remember the exact moment I met you, Ryder.
The exact moment I met you too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, Ryder, you go first. Let me hear from your POV.
Should we turn off Will's headphones? So
yeah, take it off.
We met in the at a photo shoot for the season. Every season they would have a photo shoot where they'd gather the regular cast together and get that season's set of photos. They do individual photos and the whole cast together. And we had already shot the pilot. It was now the show had been picked up for 13 episodes, which was half a season. And they brought us, you know, we all were supposed to meet and we were in the makeup hair room of the photo shoot. Yeah.
Yeah,
and just immediately Will and I started talking and did not shut up. It was like I remember we talked music, we talked Counting Crows day one. Most 90s thing ever. We talked because you were really into them and I had just discovered them. We talked about we were both living at the Oakwoods. I remember immediately knowing that we were going to be neighbors and friends. And I mean, I just, you were older, you were the coolest kid I had ever met, coolest person. You had your own car. What was it? It was a red.
I still have it, a 1986 Celica GTS. I still have that same car.
And then you had a subwoofer in it.
Yep.
And I think like week one, not day one, but like week one, you brought me in and played Paul's Boutique.
No, Paul Revere by Beastie Boys.
Yes, Beastie Boys, yes. Paul Revere by Beastie Boys, which has this crazy bass sound that goes woom, woom, woom. And it just like blew my ears out. And we were sitting in the car and I was just like, if I could ever be 16, have a car and a subwoofer and be as cool as Will Friedle, oh my God. You were the best, dude.
I remember that exact. I'll never forget it. I was sitting in the makeup chair. I was so excited to be there. I turned to my left, and there are. So I had met Ben at the audition. So Ben came to the screen test, and the screen test was between myself, your brother, older brother Shiloh, mm-hmm. and Jason Marsden, who is still one of my best friends to this day, and played Jason Marsden on the show. So I had met Ben before, but there you were. I can picture it. I can picture what I'm wearing. I'm in jeans and the shirt that I pass the poster every day. It's hanging on my wall.
I got the tie-dye shirt on, remember? Yep.
Yes, you have the tie-dye shirt on, and I turn, and I'm turning to my left, and there you are, and we started the first conversation. I'm still sitting in the chair, and the thing that scared me the most about that day is I just met Rusty. I just met everybody for the first time. You and I got along instantly, and then they're like, all right, we're going to put you all together for pictures, and they put us all together, and I put my arm up around Bill Daniels, Mr. Feeney, and he turned to me and he went, don't touch Feeney. And I really shot my hand back down.
Perfect.
And I was like, so perfect. Now all the of
most
the pictures.
Perfect Bill.
That it
is
was
Bill.
Amazing. The pictures.
Which is
that,
so convoluted it, because it's like, was he in character?
I have no idea.
I mean, because he's not wrong. Like, you shouldn't have your arm around Feeney. You were trying to just be like friendly pose for a picture.
We're taking a picture.
He's
hey.
Not wrong. But it's also so classic Bill to just be kind of grumpy.
I love it.
Don't touch Feeney.
Don't touch
just
Feeney.
Like that. And every single picture that they have. Now my hands are in my pockets and I am like, I'm not touching anyone ever again. It was amazing that first photo shoot day. Oh. Yeah, that was our intro to each other and to the world. And it was crazy. It was crazy.
Wait, so writer, did Shiloh audition to play Eric?
Yeah, he screen tested. Yeah. No, actually, he ended up not doing the network test. So Shiloh, the reason I got Boy Meets World was because Shiloh had tested for, or the reason I was first brought in to audition for Boy Meets World was because my older brother Shiloh, he's only 18 months older than me, so we always kind of went out for similar parts, or we were not that far apart. He had network tested for Michael Jacobs' previous show called Almost Home.
Almost
Home. Didn't get the part, but Michael
between
really,
myself, Shiloh, yeah. and Jason Marsden
there
for that
go.
Role.
So because of Shiloh's association, I got brought in to audition for Boy Meets World. I ended up getting the part. Meanwhile, Shiloh went off and did a pilot on another network with Ed Dechter and John Strauss, who became writers on our show.
Yes.
They had created a show called Odd Man Out, which also got rebooted 5 years later. Whatever, that's a whole nother story. But my brother was the star of his own pilot, and that show did not get picked up. And when you're a kid actor and you're in demand, all the shows pounce. Like if your contract didn't get picked up. So Shiloh got asked to come in and audition for Eric. He never actually did it. They asked him to screen test for Eric, or he got offered a show on NBC called The Mommies, where he could just be one of the sons on The Mommies, the older teenage son. And he looked at the equation, you know, my parents, and we were all like, this is crazy. Like, Ryder's going to be on this TV show. Do we want Shiloh to audition to be on the same TV show? And it was like, no, you just take the offer on this other show. But of course, that made our lives incredibly complicated because that meant my mom had to shuttle between two different sets. So he ended up not auditioning. I'm not sure if they brought in a third person or if it just ended up being you and Jason, Will. But Shiloh did not do the network test.
Finally being the I think he... So I met him the first time because it was the three of us reading for
did.
Almost Home.
Okay, so maybe he. You know, I don't know if he actually.
No,
for some
for
reason,
almost, this
just,
is for Almost Home.
For Almost
I'm saying
Tom.
For
okay,
Almost Home,
gotcha.
We did that, and then it was then between Jason and I because Shiloh, we heard Shiloh had dropped out, quote unquote, of going to Boy Meets World. But again, it was down. You talked before about how small a world it is. It was down to the three of us twice in a row, and Jason got Boy Meets or Jason got Almost Home, and then I got Boy Meets World. And
Shiloh was doing The Mommies. So
and
all
Shiloh
three
was
of
doing
you.
The Mommies. So so it was it worked out. But I was with my dad in Los Angeles, and I did not think I got the part. It was a terrible read. Ben was there. Ben came in and read with us. I was awful. And my dad said, well, what do you want to do, kiddo? You know, like what do you want? And I remember the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in Hollywood. And I was like, I want to go to the Ripley's. He's like, all right, fine. So we went there. And until about 10 years ago, it was actually there across the street from the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum. There was a bank of what was called payphones, kids, where you actually had to put in money and dial a number. And somebody else, KL54000 appeared on the other. How can I connect your call, sir? Appeared on the other side. And I called my agent, and my dad said, just call your agent and tell him you didn't get it, and we're going back home. And I called my agent and said, you got it. It's been picked up. You've got to move to L.A. And my dad and I ran through the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum and then went and found the Oakwood because I had to live in L.A. like 2 weeks later or something ridiculous like that. And that was 30 years ago. So it happened very quickly once it happened. And then you're at the photo shoot and then you're friends with Ryder and then you've got this going on, and then you're in front of the audience and it just, it's, then you're going. It's so,
so the
strange.
Photo shoot happened before you guys ever even had a rehearsal day.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a week before or the week of, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. So then by the time you get to rehearsal and you're starting this, this pilot episode, are you guys already feeling like friends and family? Like it's already, you've already started a bond.
I mean, Will and I definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember Ben and I did not start a bond. Ben was really into sports. And I was not. And I remember like a lot of the first early episodes, he wanted to like play basketball like with the other kids. And there were always other kids because you had extras too. So I remember during the pilot but also Ben was working a lot because he was in so many, you watch this pilot, he's in so many, he's in every scene.
Yeah.
And that's a lot for a kid. So he would be gone. He was sort of distanced, you know, like, and yeah, like I said, he was very much in his own world. He was very, I remember him just working and being busy and needing to learn his lines and also going to school. And he was sort of at that point Hollywood royalty for us, you know, like because his brother's show had been such a hit. He was also the person who like knew what we were doing more than any of us. I didn't really connect with Ben. I would say until like episode 4 or 5 did we start really getting to know each other. I think in part because I was just one of these other kids, you know, like I wasn't part of the family. I think Will, you probably connected with Ben because you were part of, at the time the show, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a school show. It was supposed to be a family show. And so the priority was given to the show, you know, the parents and you, Will, and Lily. And so that was sort of more the like core group. I was like an outsider. It was like me and Chauncey Leopardi, who's then gone. And then like, you know, whoever else they brought in that week that could potentially stay. But yeah, so it was really, I was just lucky to have Will. Like, I know we bonded right away. And then I loved school. Like, I already loved school and I loved my studio teacher immediately.
David Combs. Shout out to David Combs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
David Combs. And he had been brought on because he had taught Fred Savage on Wonder Years. So they brought him on and just a genius. Spoke 5 languages, could teach any subject.
He was a personal tutor to the kids of the Shah of Iran, remember that?
He was a very eccentric, interesting dude.
Yeah.
And we'll have plenty of David Combs stories, I'm sure, throughout the years. But for me, he was really like he was so smart and we just immediately bonded. So I loved school and I loved hanging out with Will. It felt very comfortable automatically.
But you're right, though. It wasn't Corey and Sean. That wasn't a thing yet.
No.
It wasn't until several episodes later, which we'll talk about, where, you know, especially when Danielle joined the cast, where it was really like, oh, this is the show.
Yeah.
Like, that's when the whole thing kind of changed. And it was, until then, it was us in those very strange clothes, which were just very, that was one of the things that struck me as we're, you know, as we get back into the episode, so we're past the opening title sequence.
Which sounds, the opening to me sounds like a music you would hear in line at Disneyland.
Yes.
Or
you're in a carousel just going around, and by the fifth time you're like, stop that song!
Yes.
Yeah.
And so this episode was written by Michael Jacobs and April Kelly. Does anyone remember April Kelly?
I do.
Yes, I do too.
Okay.
I remember
her little dog.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And her Ferrari. Remember, she'd always drive
That's
up
right.
in the Ferrari.
That's right.
I think I met April Kelly early on. I do remember her. I remember what she looks like, and I can picture an outfit. But then April Kelly just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, she was there the whole first season, wasn't she?
First season. Yeah. And then she left after the first season and, as far as I know, left the industry.
Yeah.
But her name is on
every episode of Girl Meets World. And she got paid for every single episode.
Yeah.
Okay. And then another thing I wanted to talk about is that this episode, this pilot episode, was directed by John Tracy. But then I'm pretty sure this is the only episode of season one John Tracy directed.
No, he came back.
He came back in season one?
Maybe not in season
one.
You're
couldn't
right.
have been. No, because season one was all David Trainer.
All David Trainer. Yeah. And David Trainer is a legendary television director. John is too, but David is best known for he did every single episode of that 70s show.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I have some great David Trainer stories as we get into the season. But David was incredible. John, I remember just being very funny, thick Boston accent. And he would yell and sort of shout and like tell everybody where to go. And his brother, Kevin Tracy, was also on the show. As a camera coordinator, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, so, no, at first, if you look at the pilot episode, because I notice this, it says the first, it says he was the stage manager the first episode.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
Which he was, by the time I had gotten there, he already wasn't. But I guess for that first episode, he was the stage manager. So. Yeah.
And so does anyone know why John only directed the pilot and not anymore in that first season? Was there a story there? If there is, do we not know it?
I think that's pretty typical. I think it was typical for somebody to direct the pilot and then move on, because the goal as a director is to direct as many pilots as possible and not to get stuck on a series. Because when you direct a pilot, you make money residuals
on every episode.
On every episode for the rest of that show's life. So he didn't need to, in a way. but I don't remember if there was a reason that John did not come back. But David Trainer was truly a genius. He was like a classically trained Shakespearean theater director, and he really defined the tone and the look and the feel of the show. So I think probably what happened is David Trainer came on and they gave him the entire first season in his contract. They said, like, he probably said, if I'm coming to do your, you know, show and you want my talents, I have to do X many episodes, if not the whole season, like a certain guaranteed amount. And so that's probably what kicked in. And then they just had David Trainer, which was wonderful because he really set an incredible environment for all of us.
In my head, he's 7 feet tall. I mean, I remember him being hugely tall.
Yeah,
was he 6'7" really?
I think
he was enormous.
I think so. And
he's
super
also very thin.
Yeah, he's so thin.
And so the way he walked across stage, he could like go that, you know, that cavernous stage with soundstage we talked about, he could do the length of it in what felt like four strides.
It was crazy. And he, I'll never forget feeling like such a dope because we were doing the first episode, which turned out to be the second episode that's aired. I said something like, well, you know how I did it in the audition? And in front of everybody, he's like, yeah, who cares how you did it in the audition? And I just remember being like, oh, man. Like, and he was never mean about it. He did it with a smile on his face, but it was like, oh, geez, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and do what I'm told. Right. So it was such a strange environment to go, because, again, it was just like, I didn't know any of making television like this. None. This is not how we did any of the Nickelodeon stuff. So everyone just assumed I knew what I was doing. And then it's just kind of, you're just going.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so like David the show Trainer, started and you're just going. That's it.
David Trainer would have been the first person to teach us some of the basics of sitcom acting, which are you don't have a fourth wall and you have to like, for instance, you always have to stand, like if you're having a conversation with somebody, you have to stand with your shoulders open so the camera can see your entire face. So it's like, if you notice, everybody on sitcoms kind of stands at like an awkward angle to each other and it feels weird. We make it look normal because you get used to it as an actor, but you have to sort of force your body to do something that's not natural.
And normally, you're not turning there. You have to turn the right way. And
you don't square 50-50 with people. You turn a slightly out. And then if you're going to be talking to somebody over to your right, you got to make sure you don't turn your head away from the camera. Like all these basic things that, of course, if you're a seasoned theater actor like Bill Daniels, you just know. But for us, we had to be taught that. Like you have to tell kids it's not like you're really talking to this person. You're performing talking to this person. Here's the way to do that. You know, and I remember David Trainer was so good at all those little tricks and teaching us the basics. Basics of sitcom acting. Yeah.
So the first scene that we see after the cold open is, and then the intro, we see Corey listening. They're performing Romeo and Juliet at the front of the class, and Corey is listening to the Phillies game. Yeah. In this scene is the first time I really noticed how loud the laughs were. And I couldn't tell if it was were those the sounds they collected from the live studio audience, or was the laugh track just that loud? Because the laughs sound like they're in your ear.
I've heard this about Boy Meets World before, like that it has an extremely loud laugh track compared to most sitcoms.
I
think that is true. You know, I mean, like, yeah, I think for whatever reason, maybe it was a creative choice, or somewhere along the line, the show just got cranked up because it is very loud. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there was some adherence to the genuine laughter, but there's also a machine making laughter sounds.
Didn't know us. The audience didn't know us yet. So for the first few episodes, I think it's mostly laugh track. I think until we aired, it was really mostly laugh track, because then you get fans and then the fans come in. Yeah. But until then, Michael used to always, he would always tell me that I'd say something or, hey, that joke didn't land, that whatever. And he'd always look at me and goes, to this day, I still can hear him in my head saying, don't worry, I have a machine that thinks you're hysterical. And so that's what he would say. I have a machine that thinks you're hysterical. And it's like, okay, well, that's
laughs hard.
Can we talk very briefly about the girl who is lying on the desk?
You touched me with that knife. Chauncey, you touched me the first time.
She was amazing.
Yes. Oh, my God.
And why did we never see her again? Because she was the best, other than you, she was the best child actor of the lot.
Yeah, we used to quote her for years. I mean, I remember Ben and I would say it to each other. You touch me with that knife, you better kill me the first time.
She was great.
It's great. I know. Oh, my God.
I remember, so I literally wrote that down. I'm taking notes, and I'm like, why did she disappear? She was awesome.
Well, it's just a revolving cast those first few episodes, you know? Yeah. Like, and it's true. Like, you want, the thing about a show like this is when you're, and this is to Michael's credit, you don't want to make too many decisions ahead of time, especially when it comes to cast. You want it to be an ensemble. You need to see where there's chemistry. And I think that is in part a physical thing, chemistry. Like, you need to, like, do these people just work together? Do they respond to one another? Do they make each other smile? Is there a twinkle in the eye when two people, sometimes it's just not there, you know? Yeah. And sometimes I think that they, you know, we keep trying these first four or five episodes. You're going to see this, you know, some kids come in with two lines, one kid come in, and then like somebody like Lee Norris comes in and it's just the dynamic clicks. Or when Danielle, when you came in, it was magical.
Yeah, it just
was
worked.
Magical. And oh, and that was also the same episode where they finally fired the third best friend. And I remember David Trainer, great director and so supportive. They gave me all of this guy's parts. So I showed up for work that day and my part went from like two lines to like five scenes and a whole bunch to work on. And I was so nervous. And David Trainer grabbed me and pulled me in front of the whole crew and say, can I just say, for the record, this is long overdue. Can everybody give Ryder a big round of applause?
I remember
He's going to do this week and he deserves it. And everybody applauded, the whole crew. And I remember just being like, okay, I got this. And you know, that was the episode that the show came together, because I remember with the audience that week, and we'll talk about it when we get to it, but like they reacted so much to the Topanga character in contrast to the Corey character and in contrast to the Sean. It just all came together.
That's when the show started. We had episodes before, but that is when the show started, in my opinion. And because it wasn't just Corey and Topanga, but it was also Corey, Sean. I mean, that was, the show then evolved and became, we've talked about the Two Boy Meets Worlds, where then Eric kind of had his own thing going on. And but the three of you especially, that was the start. And that was, you know, you're right. It was kind of getting there. Took a few episodes, but once it did, then it was kind of off to the
races. No, this is clearly a show about a teacher and a student. And
yeah,
man,
this episode,
it's good.
Absolutely.
It's so compelling. I cannot believe how compelling Bill Daniels was.
He's so good. I mean, he's so good.
Do you guys notice he's shaking? His hand's shaking?
Really?
I didn't notice it. I remember it from when I was a kid, and I remember seeing it, but I did not notice it in the episode.
I noticed it in the episode because Ben and I were obsessed with it, because of course we were scared kids and he was scary. He was this professional.
He was intimidating,
and he had a professional manner. He would show up memorized. He was so old school. You know, we knew him from Knight Rider or whatever. We had like visions of this great actor. And on tape night, when the audience showed up, we could tell that he was nervous. Yeah. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was just shaking hands. I don't know. I mean, that happens to actors. But I remember Ben and I being obsessed with that and like whispering to each other, did you see? His hands are shaking. And in some ways, I think it made us feel better, because it was like, oh, if this guy who is so scary to us, Mr. Feeney, if he's nervous, it's okay that we're nervous, you know? In fact, it's almost cooler that we're not shaking. You know, we can sort of have this authority as kids, like, look at us, we're cool with the audience. I remember that so distinctly, and it like just hit me like a lightning flash when I saw Bill's hands shaking. I think it's in this scene, because of the way he grabbed the radio, I could see his hands shaking. I was like, oh, that's right, I remember just always watching that.
Does anybody, now that is one of the questions I had, does anybody know how old Bill was when we started?
Well, 93, the year was 93. He is now
95.
95. So 29 years, right?
20. I was an English major. This is
exactly.
So let's take 30 from 95 would be 65, and then add 66.
How much of the pie do I get to eat is the question. All right. He's already mid 60s. Okay, by that time.
He looked good.
He looked great.
By the way, the young girl playing Juliet is named Kristen Moore. She deserves her flowers.
Yeah, she does.
The young talent we didn't get to see again, her name is Kristen Moore. So
she was phenomenal. She really was great. She had a couple lines. If you get one line and you get a solid laugh on the one line you get, that's pretty impressive.
Absolutely.
So that was great.
So in this scene, Ben gets detention. We learn that Ben gets detention and then Corey gets detention. It's going to be really hard for us to go back and forth between Ben and Corey. I will do it all the time. I'll try to correct myself when I do.
What
Corey,
should we call them? Should we just stick with character voices?
We're never going to be able to
we're
do it.
Yeah, I guess that's
we're
never true.
Gonna, we're going to go in and out both
I
of the time.
Guess
so
that's
Corey
true.
Gets detention. He goes home and this is where we meet Eric Matthews.
Yes, we do. Well, first, can we just very quickly talk about how times have changed and they showed a knife fight in school, essentially?
I mean, doesn't it immediately cut to shooting on the... Oh, no, that's later where he's shooting at the video
game.
He's
shooting at the video game, but it's somebody holding somebody else down on a desk trying to stab him, and the principal comes over like, okay. I mean, it's like, it's a different time.
Yeah.
But then we meet Eric Matthews.
Eric Matthews.
Yes.
Yeah, you had a down on yourself, dude. You were great.
No, I was not.
Why do you think you're so... It was like,
oh, because the scene at the end... So the first scene, it's not... It's very stiff. Obviously, and I have no idea what to do with my hands, and it's very awkward, the first scene. But the second, the scene where I come back and I'm acting, and I'm like, newsflash, I'm not cool. It's the worst thing ever.
You're so hard on yourself. Like, kids sitcom acting wasn't much better overall.
But it was just in the show. I mean, I remember it's literally, like, I finished it last night, and I was like, every single person in that show was better than me. Every single one.
I think you're just way too hard on yourself.
I got better. Don't get me wrong. I certainly got better. But that first episode, that was painful for me to watch. It was like, I am acting now. And I have to stand. The only thing I'm missing is literally looking down for the T on the ground to where to put my feet. Because they give you these little T marks to where you're supposed
to stand. Yeah, you were just uncomfortable, dude. But it doesn't really play that way. I'm sure you're projecting your discomfort.
I don't know.
But
I just
also, that, like I said, the writers didn't know who Eric was. You were sort of a stock older brother
generic older brother.
You're so generic. And it's all the dates. And I want the girls.
I remember
the
only time I was ever mentioned in a review at all at the very beginning. So we did, there was one table read we did where we had just aired. It was the table read right after we first came out. And Michael read reviews in front of everybody. Oh, I remember the reviews. The one he said about Bill Daniels was...
This haunted you for 30 years?
Oh, no. Well, the one about Bill Daniels was great. He said... you know, Bill Daniels comes as Mr. Feeney, and then the quote ended with, a great actor stoops. And I remember Bill putting his head in his hands and all of us laughing.
Which is
and
how Bill probably felt, right?
Yeah.
He and has two Emmys for Saint Elsewhere at this point. And he's coming onto this kids show. He must have felt, and a sitcom too. Like, he had not done multi-camera sitcom. And like, you have to remember, this is hard for people to wrap their heads around these days. But back then, you were either a TV actor or a movie actor.
Yep.
And if you were a
Stage actor.
Right, or a stage actor, of course.
Yeah.
But Bill was kind of all of those things, but TV was kind of the lowest tier. If you wanted to make no money but do quality work, you were a theater actor.
Exactly.
If you wanted to be famous, the best was movie actors. And then for being a TV actor, especially a multi-camera sitcom
actor. That's it, a sitcom TV actor. And then a kids show sitcom TV actor.
Oh my God, he was so
It was
so
like
grumpy.
Working the drive-thru.
Can I read you a review?
Yeah.
Oh God, please.
Okay, so David Zurowick of the Baltimore Sun wrote, predicting Nielsen's success for Boy Meets World, .. is not a particularly daring or incisive call. It's mainly based on scheduling and stars. Then he continued, forget quality. These are kids we're programming for on Friday nights. Here's where you have to give ABC some credit for going an extra mile and adding William Daniels to the cast as Corey's nemesis, his sixth grade teacher, Mr. Feeney. The confrontation between the, hey, I'm just a kid, Corey, and the arch and starch Feeney makes this series something an adult doesn't have to feel ashamed of watching.
Amazing.
He ultimately gave it 2.5 stars out of 4, but said, I won't argue with anyone who wants to give it 3 stars.
Okay, well, there's something that's better. Because
I was
going to say,
I think the only one
I heard was that I was mentioned at all was the older brother is a cardboard cutout prop. That's the only one
Which is
I remember.
Also, kind of correct.
It's so true.
Your
it
character is just
true.
A stand-in for. Yeah, no. I play
You are archetypal older brother.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, we all are in these early days, except for Ben and Bill. You know, like,
which
their
was a great
were,
dynamic.
It's
it was
an amazing
a
dynamic.
Great dynamic between the two of them. It really was.
Yeah.
But I just remember shooting in that bedroom scene. And if I'm, I could be wrong. I was thinking about this last night, but I think our beds constantly switch. Where it's all right, just whatever the episode was, it was like, now that's Corey's bed. Well, now that's Eric's bed. Now that's Corey's bed. Now that's Eric's bed. And it just kind of went back and forth over and over. And it was always like entrances and exits, man. Like, Eric, walk into room. Do not move hands. Say Corey line. Walk out of room.
Can we get to scene three now?
Can we please? please?
Scene three. We go downstairs. We've got the parents.
We meet the family for the first time.
Yeah, we finally meet the family. And a Full House reference?
Yes! It was so self-referential.
Of course. I thought we didn't do that till like season five, but no, it's really funny that, it was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. And
you
Lily
had
Nixon,
to. I remember Lily as
so cute.
Kind of being like, geez, it's weird. She's just spouting the lines. And it's not, to me, it was like, oh, it's not really work. When you watch it, she's adorable
and hitting
some pretty great beats.
What was the line at the end where she said, I don't even remember because I wasn't there for the pilot, obviously. So I don't remember ever hearing Lily say it. But I remember that a line she says during the tea party with Ben at the end.
Yeah.
You guys all quoted, you repeated the way she said it all the time. And I think I wrote it
down. What was that?
Which one?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to need to find it. But it was like, I'm not telling. She had some reading during that line. Gosh, I wish I wrote it down. But I hear Ben and Ryder saying it.
We used to make fun of her for it. Oh my God.
Yes, because it was some.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I totally remember what you were saying, Will, about there was this, because it's hard to remember that when you're a kid, a lot of what you do is compare yourself to other kids.
Sure.
And especially younger ones. And you're so proud of yourself for not being that dumb younger kid. And I remember comparing myself to Lily and thinking, well, she's not a real actor. What is she doing? But she's like five or
and she's
six,
good.
And she's amazing.
But
I remember being so smug. And I think that was part of being 12 or I was 13. So Ben was only 12. And I think it was part of our like, well, at least we're not just like, you know, because it was hard. It's hard to get a 6-year old to say lines and to stand
in
the right
place
and have anything. Right. I mean, I have a 7-year old. I know. And like, so the idea that she was able to deliver what she was doing is incredible. But at the time, I was just so proud of myself for being like, well, I know how to read and hit my marks. And I know how to really act.
I know
act.
How to read.
Isn't that ridiculous? But that's what you do when you're a kid. You're just so proud of like not
way
being
go,
eight.
6-year-old.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
no, she was, but that's the thing. I look back at that now. She was exactly what she was supposed to be. She was adorable.
Wonderful.
She was
such
hitting the lines. And she was a great foil to Ben. And the scenes where she just all of a sudden, we'll get into it, but where she grabs the doll and throws it and then just offers him the chair. All that stuff is great.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a really great opening scene too for Betsy and Rusty, Amy and Alan. Talk about two like wonderful parent characters. Like just right off the bat, they have a great dynamic. You feel the love in this family.
You just want to be part of the family.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's immediate.
Yeah,
it's so comforting. It's so welcoming. And yet it still has that level of irony, right? Like self-awareness. That's like the sort of Boy Meets World Michael Jacobs magic is that, you know, it does the predictable thing, the very sweet, loving, but then everybody's just sarcastic and ironic enough, just like zinging each other enough, you know, and like, especially Rusty as the dad is just, you know, when you come for this big, like, Corey moment where he's like, Dad, I left you. And like the way that Rusty just kind of plays it off, like, I'm cool, man. It's good.
Yeah,
you know, like,
it's fine.
Yeah. It's perfect.
Circle of life.
But it's also, it's such a typical thing in sitcoms about kids. And it was done here too, but it was done in a much, I thought a better way, better written way. At the end of the day, it just comes down to the writing. There's always the sense of someday you'll understand, kid. Like you get that in every show. Someday you'll understand, kid. But it didn't come off like that with this episode. It wasn't other people telling. I mean, even though it was Corey finding it out himself.
With Feeny. It's personalized with Feeny. Like, it becomes this journey with Feeny. And that's, like, we'll get into it. But when you see Feeny get ditched on his dinner, it's like, oh, he's humanized. And for Corey to have, it's exactly played out. So the, like, you'll know when you're older is played out in story.
Right, that's what I mean.
Characters.
So it's not that kind of sitting him down. You'll figure this out when you're older. Can we eventually talk about Feeny just making a salad? We'll get to that. Okay.
So in this scene, though, this is the scene where we find out that the family already knows that Corey has detention. And he's like, how do you possibly already know that? And now we find out as the audience, oh, he stuck his head over the side of the fence and told me. And you learn as the audience. And by the way, that's all they say. It's not made a big deal about like, oh, drats, the teacher lives next door. It's just that's it. The audience learns, oh, Feeny stuck his head over the fence. He lives next door. So that's
Feeny
obviously...
lives to the side of us on the side fence. That's what we learn right from there, which is pretty amazing.
Their backyards bump into each other.
It's directly opposite the front door. You go into the front door the left side, you go through to the kitchen, and then you go into the backyard.
Then they're not neighbors. He lives behind them.
That's still a neighbor, my friend.
I guess.
All right, can we get the scene four?
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
It's 2024 and stress is already everywhere.
Deadlines at work.
Your kid's screaming at you.
Non-stop traffic.
The world is ending.
That's a big jump there, Ryder.
Yeah, sorry, kind of true.
Yeah, well, when we want to get away from the struggles of everyday life and have some comforting me time, we break into some Keebler Sandies.
Let's say it's finals week and Mr. Feeny has scheduled all of the tests into one day. How will Topanga find a comforting moment to herself?
Go to the mall?
Not with this hair.
Play guitar with her father, Jedediah?
Depends on which Jedediah.
Bite into some delicious Keebler Sandies?
Exactly. Keebler Sandies are buttery shortbread cookies made with simple ingredients.
And each Keebler Sandies cookie is baked to perfection by the adorable Keebler elves for a light sweetness and texture that melts in your mouth.
God bless those little Keebler elves.
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat that will keep you going.
So, the next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for a Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
Tell the elves Pod Meets World sent ya.
They're real. I've seen them.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car. Backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it.
Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by the experts.
Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach.
Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
How many scenes do we have?
So then we go back to school. We learn about detention. We go back to school. Now, this scene I thought was a little was really interesting. So I thought it was going to, again, watching it for the first time in 29 years, maybe the first time ever. I don't have a memory of it. I thought when Corey says to Sean, hey, should we go to the game on Friday? Let's go. And Sean says, well, what about detention? And he's like, don't worry about that. In my head, I thought, oh, now the rest of the episode's going to be he ditches detention. They come up with a scheme to go get tickets. No.
None of that. Because they weren't Corey and Sean yet.
The first forgotten sibling is reference. I make a joke about Chauncey's character being an only child.
Yeah.
He's lucky to be an only child because he has bought a hot lunch or I don't know what, or he brings, I don't know, but I was immediately like, wait, so Sean was already established as not an only child, which then gets completely forgotten as the seasons go on.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you didn't like your lunch because you must have been, I'm assuming, the second child. Yeah. So second child problems, you get forgotten because there are too many other things to think about. And Chauncey has a delicious lunch because he's an only child. But yeah,
which is the opposite of girl. I'm sorry. I always wanted to buy my lunch. Like if somebody made you lunch, that like you wanted to buy lunch at school, didn't you? That's a whole different thing. I'm just. It was a weird joke to me because I was like, I would rather have bought lunch at school than have the sandwich that my mom was going to make.
Too. I thought, but I don't know. I think that's a class distinction that's different in cities than suburbs.
I think if
you're in the city, your parents just pay the cheap lunch or you get the free lunch. And then if you have really loving parents, they like make you your lunch. But I had a bag lunch, my like vegetarian crappy was like such a source of shame.
Oh man! Yeah,
if I had been able to get the hot pizza lunch at the
exactly or like the hot dogs, or the
I would have been a rich kid, man. No,
exactly.
Yeah.
God. Anyway, right. Oh, something shiny. So that whole, but Danielle talked about this at the very beginning about continuity for our show.
Oh, our show is disastrous.
And it was just all over the place all the time of who had siblings, who didn't have siblings, where did you live, who did you live with, all this stuff.
Ryder had a very good point. To Michael's credit, you don't really want to get attached to anything. And if in sitcom land, if something is funny, that is king. Whatever is funny.
Sure.
And so if it made sense to have a joke that Ryder is not as well taken care of because he's got siblings, make that joke. And if 5 episodes from now, we want to say that Ryder's an only child, we'll do that too. Yeah.
Well, and who cares? I mean, that's the evolution of Sean too, because like, you know, I took over for some other actor and they gave me a sister for that episode. Then they forgot about it. And then it was really just like one trailer park joke that established that Sean lived at a trailer park. And I will find it. I can't wait to see it. Because I remember it was just like an offline, or it was just an offhand, like one line joke that then became this like recurring joke that then became the central drama of Sean's life is that he's so poor and that his parents have abandoned him at different times and that he, you know, complicated, you know, that we ended up developing this entire history out of what really started as a make fun of the poor kid joke at some point, you know, and I can't wait to see it. All right, let's go to the treehouse, scene 4.
Yes.
I don't think the one thing that went through my head is I don't think I ever got to do a single scene in that treehouse.
No, I don't think I did really either.
It wasn't very big.
No.
But by the way, we don't use treehouses enough on shows. It was beautiful.
Yeah,
so cool.
Really cool. Really cool,
really different for a set. Like, I thought it looked great. I just was like, why is there not another one of these?
Yeah. So I watched this episode with my son. Maybe now is a good time. I recorded a conversation with him before and after. And the reason I bring it up is because I think I didn't get this on tape when we talked with my microphone, but he was blown away by the idea that everything was shot inside. When I told him that, like, even when we were in the treehouse, that's on a stage, we are inside. And he could not get over that. That was like the most shocking thing that ever happened. He's like, wait, so you never went? And I was like, no, dude, that's the way you should film a TV show. It's everything inside. And this scene was especially confounding because you're outside in the treehouse.
Yeah.
And I guess like maybe we assume everybody knows that, but probably not, especially not kids, right? When they watch a show, they believe in the reality of it's outdoors. But yeah, so
writer,
I had a discussion.
Indy has never seen an episode of Boy Meets World, right?
Not completely true. He had watched one episode after we had done a taping. We did one of these charity rewatches last year. And so it was queued up on Disney Plus. So the next time he turned on Disney Plus, there was an episode. He was like, let's watch your show. And we did. And it's from like fifth season. I had no recollection of it. And he thought it was so weird and he never wanted to do it again. But now he's been watching sitcoms. He's been watching multi-camera shows. And I realized it's kind of appropriate for him to watch it. And so I sat down with Indy. I asked him a little bit before we started, and then we talked a little after. And so I put it together in a couple minutes. This is a clip I am calling Too Much Shirts.
Great.
What do you think the show's about?
A dude.
Yeah. What are your favorite TV shows right now?
I don't really have like a favorite right now.
Okay. Nikki, Ricky, Dickie and Tricky and Dawn?
What the heck?
What's it called?
Nikki, Ricky, Dickie and Dawn. And I already finished all of them.
Yeah, you finished all of them. What about Thundermans? Did you finish the Thundermans?
Yes. Right. But I mostly watch Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yeah, Diary of a Wimpy Kid's a big hit. Well, I think maybe that's a good indication that you'll like this show. But I haven't seen it for 30 years, so I don't know how I'm going to feel about it. What do you think I'm going to look like?
Handsome.
Oh, thanks, man.
No freckles.
Yeah, I don't think I had freckles by that time. I had freckles when I was your age, but they were gone by the time I started the show.
Your skin was shiny.
Makeup.
Well, you had makeup?
Of course. Yeah, you always wear
okay,
makeup.
Okay, get back to you and let's watch it.
Okay. Any initial thoughts, Indy?
It was good.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't laugh.
I never do that to any of them.
Oh, okay. What was good about it?
I don't know. I just like you in it.
Oh, yeah? So I was your favorite part?
Yes.
I had a small part, though. I didn't really do much.
You did a lot.
What did I do?
You just said hi. And you were at the same spot every time you talked.
Oh, in the cafeteria?
You never, like, got up.
Well, I was in the classroom, too. I was sitting
Yeah, but you were always sitting. Yeah. Whenever you talked, you were sitting.
That's true. I don't think I stand in the entire pilot. I thought I sounded weird. My voice sounded like shaky to me.
I liked it.
All right. What did you think of the storyline with Corey?
Who's he?
He's the main kid. Okay. It was all about him. What are you talking about? You saw me. I'm just sitting
there. I was too focused on you, so I said it was only about you.
No. Come on. What about the teacher? What did you think of him?
He was weird.
Why?
Because he had a mustache.
Do you think he's a good teacher?
No.
Why not?
He's mean.
Oh, you thought he was mean, huh?
Yeah.
Well, what about the parents? Did you think they were good parents?
Yeah, but he didn't like the dad. He was cheesy.
Cheesy? What way?
He was just like...
What about Will? What about Will as the older brother? How was he?
Meany.
You thought he was mean, too? Did it look like Will looks now?
No.
Yeah, it doesn't look anything like him?
Only his hair.
All right, what did you think of our clothes and stuff?
Too much shirts. Long shirts.
Yeah. They were really big, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Does it seem like old-fashioned?
No.
Really? Did it feel like that's what it's like to be a kid these days, too?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, do you think you'd want to watch any more?
Sure.
Yeah, and I have to say, he has been begging to watch it every day since.
Wow, Feeny's Mean. Interesting that he picked up the Feeny's Mean kind of thing.
He did, because Feeny is, actually.
He is.
Like, I was
he
amazed
is.
At how strict he is and how, like, authoritarian. But yeah, it was so funny to realize that my son was really seeing it through Corey's eyes. And actually, the fact that he didn't even recognize, like, he didn't even know Corey's name, I think is an indicator that he just saw Ben as a sort of avatar. Do you know what I mean? He put himself in Ben's shoes. Like, he thought the brother was mean, the teacher was mean, because that's how Corey sees the world, right? Like, that's how it starts. And he didn't, you know, he's seven, so he's still kind of in the zone where I think if he's introduced to a character and they're like, Mr. Matthews, get out of my face, which is like what Feeny says to him, he's like, he's not going to come back from that very easily.
Now, I have a question. Was he right? Did you not stand throughout the entire episode?
I think so. Yeah. After he said that, I was like, I'm only sitting in the cafeteria and sitting in the classroom. So,
jeez.
Yeah. And I think it's like that for the first season. until the Corey's Alternative Friends episodes, I'm always just like, you know, I mean, in a weird way, I was sort of like this. What are the characters in the Muppets where they're on the box?
Oh,
I was kind of like that, right? Like I was just Corey's like sidekick in the cafeteria while we eat. Cause I just remember always having to eat and act the worst.
You're good at it though. You are.
You're a great actor.
No, I'm not because I eat too much. I actually ate. If you watch Bill Daniels, he just like pushes stuff around on his plate. That's an actor thing.
Smart, you see that in every show. I literally watched it last night in MASH. Where all the characters are pushing around the food. That is like a big actor thing. You move your fork, but you don't actually eat.
So smart.
And
so
you're just chowing down food.
I'm actually eating.
Do you remember Michael rationalized that once, why you were doing that, is because you were poor and it's the only place you got food. And you're like, that sounds like a rationalization. He's like, yeah, I just made that up.
Yeah, totally.
I find a moment where I don't have to speak for a while and then take a bite there so that in the background somewhere people see that I am eating. It makes you think that I must be eating the rest of the time, but then that's the only time I really eat. But I'm not in the pilot, so what do I know?
It depended on the episode and how fat I was. Towards the end where I was very, very fat, I'd eat whatever they put in front of me.
But speaking of eating, Feeney serves himself a salad, which is his entire dinner
for two people. A salad for two, which is what he made.
By the way, it was the starter. I think he had a multiple course meal.
No, because later they referenced
salad for two.
Yeah, salad for two.
Yeah.
No, I guess.
And by the
way,
just greens. There was nothing else in the salad. He didn't even slice a tomato, the man. It was like, help us out a bit here.
Our budget was tight, guys. We couldn't spring for a steak.
I'm pretty sure it was supposed to imply that he had a full meal planned.
I think so, too.
And it was the starter.
Now, I have a question. I know it was obviously the pilot, so it's the first time, but was that angle into Feeney's house ever used again?
No.
Never. We never saw that again, kind of peeking into Feeney's home.
No, there's a scene later where I think Ben and him sit outside of Feeney's home and have tea together or in talk coming up. But those were even very few and far between.
You went into the house once when it became with the lit the loo to see how licht it is. I mean, you guys were in the house once.
The B&B episode.
Yeah,
yes,
we'll get
that's
into
the
that.
One time we got to see inside Feeney's house is when Corey and I turned his house into a B&B. And I remember it was really exciting to finally be here. And it suddenly had two stories, which I don't think makes sense based on the outside, but yes.
But that's the only time we actually saw that angle from into Feeney's home was just that time in the pilot. Okay, I was curious about that.
Yeah, I don't think we'd ever seen that again. And I thought that looked really great too. We have another, Corey makes a comment in this treehouse scene about America's funniest home teacher.
Yes,
and I was like, wow, in this episode, we have a Full House reference and an America's Funniest Home video.
Both ABC references, right?
Yep.
You know? The only thing he didn't do was turn to the camera and go, watch us on ABC Friday at 8:30. I mean, it was like, they threw it in where they could. Well, if you keep it in the family, that makes sense.
So this is the scene where we, all of a sudden, our heartstrings pull for Feeney and we realize that he has been stood up and that he is a little heartbroken about it. And now we've humanized this very stern teacher. Then the next scene we're in with Betsy Amy and Corey in the bedroom, and this is where she tells him that they're bringing in a renter
scene.
Did you notice the thing? What's the
switching of the beds?
No. But Ben used to always say we never.
Oh, Holcomb! I wrote it down. Holcomb!
He
I wrote
says
it down.
Holcomb.
Not only that, but it's also the duck hunt gun has no cord in one scene, and then the next scene has a cord and is plugged
in. Holcomb?
So Ben could not say how come.
How come?
So whenever they wrote the line "How come" for the Holcomb. First season, he goes Holcomb. Holcomb.
And we would always
and
say
we
that.
Used to tease him so much.
Be like,
about
Holcomb,
it.
You say it like that, Ben.
The second he used to always bug.
I wrote that down.
The second I heard it, it was like all the memories came flashing back of you just being like, Ben Holcomb, you say.
I wrote it Hocome. Holcomb.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
so
that was Ben.
Funny.
Oh, that so... and the belt pulling, which must have come later. He did this like kind of always grabbing at his belt to pull up his pants. That plus Holcomb. Yep.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh, Holcomb.
We'll keep a Holcomb tally going to see how many in the first season.
I didn't notice it, and now I'm going to pay attention to
Holcomb,
it. Okay.
One.
So we learned that, you know, Corey once abandoned his dad as he got a little older.
Great twist. Emotional. Yep.
Adding in another layer makes Corey think. And then we get into the next scene, which is the detention scene, which to me is just of every scene in this show, was such a standout because of Bill Daniels. What luck that we had Bill Daniels.
Seriously. I mean, not only that, because we also know that there was, for a while, we weren't going to have him and he was going to leave. And the fact that he stayed.
Let's leave that for Bill to tell us. Exactly. I can't wait to hear that from Bill. Exactly. I want to know that story, but he is so compelling.
Now, did anyone else have a problem? And I get why they did it. I totally get why they did it. And it was necessary to do it. But the fact that he's such a stern teacher and there's nobody else in detention. Again, I got why they did it. They wanted the scene just between Feeny and Corey. I totally understand that, and that's what it needed to be. But I found it was like there's no, the entire school, there's nobody else in detention but Corey.
Oh, you know what's funny? I didn't think about it as being that this is the detention for the entire school.
It was just his class?
It was just Feeny's class.
Okay.
It's just for Feeny's class or classes. And that there were other teachers running other detentions in the school. That's where I didn't think about it as
such a spectacular scene.
It's amazing.
You know, the real risk of this scene is that there's not a laugh for, you know, 5 minutes straight. And that, you know, you're going to dip into sentimentality, which I think Boy Meets World did. Very often. But I couldn't believe how serious it was and how willing it was to become a drama show, essentially, for an extended scene between two characters. And man, like I said when we started, I could not believe how much of Boy Meets World was already encoded in this episode. And I think it's because of this scene. I mean, they must have just knew they nailed it when they shot this scene. And you could see it and be like, oh, this is... I want to endlessly watch these people change each other, you know.
Well, Bill doesn't speak at the beginning. That's the amazing part about it is Bill doesn't speak.
For so long.
You know, Ben is doing his kind of shtick, and Bill is doing everything while staring down at the page, and it still works. It's so compelling.
The Ben shtick is actually one of my favorite parts because, as Ryder mentioned at the very opening of the show, Corey's character is a little bratty, and you're a little bit like, is this a likable kid? And one of the things I loved is that you see him push the button and keep pushing the envelope and pushing the envelope. And then even though he's out the door, he comes back in like, I'm never going to leave. Like, you and I both know you're in control. I'm still ultimately a good kid. And that's,
I know you're right.
And you didn't even need to say it. You saw it. You knew it. You now already love and know this kid is a good kid. I don't know. I loved it. I love that beginning part. And then when Feeny finds out that Corey was spying on him or that had seen him and that he was stood up, the change, the sternness with which Bill does that scene, it was just so compelling. I was absolutely eyes glued to the TV.
Yeah. But also a perfect teacher where he uses it. He turned it into a teachable moment. I'm going to take this moment and I'm going to teach what I tried to teach you with Romeo and Juliet. I'm now going to teach you right here because of this. And it was, it's such a great turn. And it just shows such depth of the Feeny character, which is, wow, you spied on me. You think this happened in my life. I'm not going to explain what happened in my life. I'm going to use this to teach you about something. And it was set the stage for every other teachable Feeny moment that you still have, which is another question we always get, which is what moment, you know, what did you learn from Bill or what did you learn from Feeny? And it was always moments like this where it's that teachable moment. It was incredible. Just
one of
amazing.
My favorite lines, ironically, is when he says during Bill's monologue moment, he says, you come and you go, you come into my class and then you leave me. And, you know, he's basically saying like, I only get you for 1 year, which turns out to not be the case when you have a television show. But yeah, he says, you know, the time spent with me, I don't know if you learn anything or not. And it's like, if only we could tell him like, you're going to be there for 7 years. You're going to be going to college with these kids.
Yeah. But he's talking about, I mean, we're at the end of the day, you have to remember, we're doing a kid's show, which is what TGIF was and what this was specifically geared toward. And one of the main characters is talking about Shakespeare and Chaucer and some of the greatest poets and writers of all time. And using that as a teachable, it was, again, the idea of the teachable moment coming from a teacher, which is something that the joy that Boy Meets World could do, as opposed to, I learned the lesson from my dad, I learned the lesson from my mom. It's just kind of, you'd seen it before, or the teacher was a buffoon. Yeah. So the teacher teaching is just such a wonderful thing to watch all the time. So yeah, that was, I'm like you, Danielle. I couldn't move my eyes away from that scene. It was incredible. Amazing.
It's so great.
Amazing.
Okay, so then Corey goes back to the house and he apologizes to his dad for ditching him. And Ryder, you mentioned it briefly earlier, but the how casual Rusty is about, yeah. Oh, what, you know, no, that's cool. I get it. It's the circle of life. He's such a cool dad.
Yeah, he was.
Which is why I think my son called him Cheesy, because he was trying cheesy. Because he's probably taking a dig at me in that moment. Like, Dad, you try and be cheesy. You try and be cool like that all the time. And I fail.
No.
I love this scene. I love how Rusty is so relaxed and like not precious about anything, as Rusty always is. Such an amazing actor. And then Lily, so good. Like, Lily's just wonderful. And this is such a cute scene. You can see Corey finally changing, right? Like, he's doing the things now. He's talking to his dad. He's hanging out with his sister. It's a really great little scene.
I thought, I'm not a huge fan of runners. I get that not all runners are good, but I wish that the no, don't hug me was a thing that kept going. I thought that was a great moment, and I thought that was one that could have come back later in the show.
I don't think it ever did, right?
No, I think that's the only time it happened, and I think it was great. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, the next scene we have Corey and Eric get to resolve their little conflict. Corey encourages Eric to call his date, Heather, and which I think is really sweet. It's a nice little wrap up that now he wants his brother to be happy. He wants him to have that, even if it means pain for himself. He wants his brother to be happy. And then he goes downstairs and he has tea with his little sister.
Yep.
And it's
great
just,
scene.
It is so cute when she tosses the doll.
I love that. I thought that was such a wonderful moment where she just tosses the doll. It's like the doll, because if you go back in the entire episode, a lot of scenes, she's cradling it like a baby and feeding it. And it's the most important thing to her. Corey, do you want it up there to keep you safe? And the second she gets a chance to be with her brother, she discards it. And here's the chair for you. It was
so
great.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. It's a very cute scene between the two of them. And then we learn in the tag, I thought this was very funny, that in the tag we learn, oh, you thought Mr. Feeny was stood up? Absolutely not. He's not a loser.
You know nothing.
You know nothing at all. It wasn't a date. It was his sister.
That's right.
I thought that was a really cute
little... He was going to travel a very long way for a really light meal. just for the, it's like, hey,
just
George, I drove 6 hours. Could you have thrown some chicken in this? Like, thanks.
Please.
Just greens.
Something.
I thought it was just, it's funny to me that like, they didn't want to leave it that he did actually get stood up. They wanted to clarify he didn't.
Yeah. Well, I think it was also kind of clarifying that at 11, what
you know
think
nothing.
You know, you don't really know.
Yeah. That's a good point.
It brings us back to where Corey started, which is that he knows nothing.
He knows nothing.
You got to come back next week to see him learn again something else about,
and we'll all learn together.
Well, speaking of which, we will be back next week. We will be watching the next episode, which is season 1, episode 2. It's called On the Fence. And I'm excited to see it. I feel like I was very interested in the pilot. I thought the pilot was way better than I was expecting it to
be.
Me too. Me too.
And so I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to see what this next episode was, which we've learned in this episode, Will, that is actually the first episode you guys all taped together.
I think so. Yeah, I think this was the one.
So awesome. I'm excited to watch that. And you guys have any closing thoughts?
I think just saying it was a lot better than I remember it being, and I'm glad it was. It was, it was a great episode. And man, Bill Daniels can act. That's what I took away from this.
Completely agree.
Will, sign us off.
We love you all. Pod dismissed. Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Danielle Fishel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production Danielle Romo. Producer and editor Tara Sudbach. Producer Lorraine Guerrez. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon. Follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com.
When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through.
BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy.
Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you.
Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.